Right, I believe we are live. We should have
That's
wrote, yeah,
it,
we should have wrote like a jingle, like an entry jingle.
Oh, that can come further down the line, mate. Once the donations start rolling in, you know.
Yeah, maybe. We'll
Once the
start just
funding.
giving codes for someone to write as a jingle.
So anything that happens from this point, then we've deemed it fit for public consumption, yeah. So
Something like that, yeah.
nice. All right, well,
Past the guidelines.
I'll crack this beer.
Oh, hello.
Yeah, it's actually a tribute to the last drink we probably had together.
Yeah, well, cheers.
Cheers, bro.
What are you, is that limoncello sour?
It's a limoncello sour. So I feel like it could go one of two ways. It's from Black Sheep Brewery, North Yorkshire.
Oh, strong.
Right, this could go one of two ways, so.
Verdict. It's sour.
It's sour. Oh, I mean, you know, I feel like I might warm to it.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a weird one as the first drink of the day, but yeah, the last time we probably had a drink together was what, like a month?
I can't even remember the last time we had a beer together.
Last time we had a limoncello together, it's probably the last time we were behind a bar, right?
Absolutely.
So that's almost a month, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you want to kick things off then? Do you want to do a little intro?
Yeah, if you want. I suppose we should say hi to everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. All 10 viewers that we're going to get.
Probably. You're much better at speaking about yourself than I am, so do you want an intro first?
I mean, sure. I've not got anything planned, but...
That's the idea.
Yeah, true. But again, I'm not sure how good of an idea that is, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, I know I like to talk, but we more often go on tangents that... We'll see. So, yeah, my name is Jack. So I'm one half of Just to Run With It, along with Mr. Andy over there. So
the better half. You're the better half.
I can't deny it. So I'm actually quite like a late bloomer to the hospitality industry. So I'm now 27, even though I look a little bit older, especially with this haggard isolation beard I've got going
55
on.
At least.
So I've actually only been in hospitality for just shy of 4 years. So when I first got into it, I joined Smugglers Cove in Liverpool. So that's where both me and Andy are based. And through Smugglers, that's where I met Andy, along with a lot of other people along the way. And kind of right off the bat, my eyes were open to a whole new world when it came to hospitality. Like I always enjoyed being in bars. I always liked being sociable. But certainly being on the other side of the bar, and very much getting like a newfound respect for what it was all about. Whether it be knowledge on spirits, wines, beers, cocktail making, just general showmanship, the full works. So that's basically where I've been based for the last 3.5 years. Obviously, in that time, myself and Andy, we've tried to kind of get involved in other things outside of that space, and more so in the last kind of like 6 or 12 months. With movements that are happening in the rum world particularly that are very exciting, which I'm sure we'll get onto at some point, either in this or
hopefully
in future chats that we have, I'm sure. There's certainly a lot of interesting and exciting doors that are opening, not just for us, but for everyone in hospitality. And I think that the current situation, very unfortunate situation, has at least kind of highlighted some positives within our industry, you know. Like, I never realized just how close-knit everyone really was. There's a lot of very charitable stuff going on. There's a lot of like leading figures in the industry that are, you know, kind of putting out free content, having interesting chats. there's very charitable organizations that are, you know, funding people that are struggling, stuff like that. So don't get me wrong, I love this job, but there's definitely days, isn't there, where if you feel a bit underappreciated. But certainly in this recent global situation, it definitely doesn't feel like that. I'm sure you'd agree. But I've been very impressed from what I've seen from bartenders all around the world. I'm sure it's the same with chefs as well, and just general businesses that are, you know, bars, restaurants, pubs, everything all around the globe. It's quite uplifting to see. You know,
it's nice to see everyone coming together a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Regardless of
if you're for me personally. No, sorry. Go on.
No, I was just saying, like, if you're in hospitality or not, it's nice to see everyone kind of coming banding together a little bit, and you know, maybe people will start appreciating coming to bars a little bit more.
Yeah. It's been very jarring for me personally, because I really like interacting with people. The whole social side of it is very big. And like, don't get me wrong, doing stuff like this is great. Having watched loads of Facebook lives, Instagram lives, people doing, you know, spirit-based stuff or drinks-related podcasts, or just, you know, general, way to describe it. You know, just like these daily or weekly little video clips that people are putting up themselves or others, or articles people are posting, stuff like that. It's all great. But like the physicality, you know, like being face-to-face with someone, having an actual drink with someone in person, getting to chat about stuff that you're really passionate about and enjoy, there's a whole other dimension that has just been completely swept from under our feet. And then on top of that, obviously not knowing necessarily when we're going to get the chance to jump back into it kind of sucks. I don't know about you, but I'm like, I'm still making drinks at home, you know, but it's just not the same. Like, I'm itching to kind of get behind a bar again and be in like a busy environment. And who knows how long that's going to be. I'm hoping sooner rather than later.
Well, fingers crossed. Yeah, fingers crossed.
Yeah,
I think it's it'd be nice to. I'm actually looking forward to going back, because I feel like we might be quite busy, like straight off the bat. So,
yeah. Well, I guess it could go one of two ways, right? It's like either people, for a start off, are quite tentative about it, and I'm sure that it's not going to be a case of just snap your fingers and everything's back to normal. You know, I imagine it's going to be staggered and it's going to take time, and there's obviously a lot still to kind of unfold with the whole situation, but I'm hoping that when the time is right and it's safe to do so, that there are busy bars again, and you know, and everyone's kind of like you say, just appreciating it maybe that a little bit more. I know I will. I'm just going to appreciate seeing people in general. Just having actual face-to-face conversations is going to be crazy. So that last few minutes is a prime example of how I can go off on a tangent very, very quickly. It started off with me explaining who I am. I think that's probably quite a good starting point.
It's a solid example of who you are as a person, Jack.
There you go. So I'll pass it over to you, mate. I actually am warm into this limoncello sour, you know.
Oh, that's good.
It's not too bad. Don't get me wrong. It's not.
Does it taste
on par with the good stuff, but with the legit limoncello.
How many times do I have to tell you can't drink limoncello out of a can?
Hey, hell. We tried something new at least, so could tick that off the list for today's chores, you know?
Yeah, well done.
Go on, fire away.
So I'm Andy, the other half of Just Run With It. I've been working for a little while in bars now, probably coming up to 7 years, maybe. I'm getting old, very old. And I've done a few things. I've worked for a New World Trading Company for a little while, kind of done some odd jobs here and there. Well, yeah, I think my job title's changed more than probably anyone else's, I think, over the years. And at the moment, I am just based in Smugglers with Jack, having a wonderful old time, drinking loads of rum, mostly. Occasionally, we do make some drinks as well, but it's certainly a lot of fun, causing trouble most of the time. I mean, anyone that knows us will probably agree with that. But anyway,
No. I would say that we are two stand-up young gentlemen.
Youngish.
Very well behaved.
Most of the time. But yeah, kind of the idea behind this whole thing is basically we started this Instagram page kind of a little while ago, probably about 6 months ago, right?
Yeah. Well, certainly the idea for it has been in the last kind of 6 or 9 months, and then we never really had a set idea about, well, it's hard to explain. We obviously, we're very passionate about rum, but we're passionate about all spirits in general. And I think certainly in more recent times, one of the things that has been very interesting to discover is that a lot of people within the industry are really passionate about what they're doing. So whether it's rum or whether it's another kind of spirit or, you know, brewers making beer or people, the list is too long to name really, isn't it? People that are involved in all these different stages within this kind of industry, whether it's people actually producing the spirits or the beer or the wine, whether it's the people that are selling it, you know, and you've got like brand ambassadors and reps traveling around, everyone's really, really passionate about it and they all kind of have their own take. And people that we've met certainly in the last kind of 18 months, couple of years, predominantly in the rum world, naturally, because they're the ones that are coming into our place of work or inviting us to events and stuff like that, found that everyone is just super, super passionate and interested, and people seem to just have so much time. There's countless occasions when we've arranged to meet up with people and just, you know, for no real reason other than the fact that they really enjoy what they're doing and they're passionate about what they're doing and they want to spread the word, you know, they'll come and see us, sit down, talk us through some new and interesting things that they've got, you know, and just kind of get our feedback on it and see what we think. And it's all really with the general intention just to kind of like spread the word, right? Just to introduce people to new and exciting stuff.
Yeah.
So go on.
I think that's kind of part of the reason why we probably like it so much is even the people that are kind of predominantly in sales roles within like the rum industry are all really kind of passionate about it as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Just like trying to sell any old nonsense to people. It's a bit more about kind of a culture that goes along with it, and everyone seems like a pretty nice person that we've met.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And therefore, with the Instagram page, it was something that we knew we wanted to focus mainly on rum, you know, hence the pun name. But I think the idea was that anything that we came across that we liked, enjoyed, any events we went to that we found interesting or wanted to big up, we kind of wanted to feature all of that, right? We didn't really want to limit ourselves to one specific thing. I would like to think between us, we know a little bit about rum. There's obviously so much to learn, and there is always new and interesting developments that are happening even right now that we're trying to keep up with as much as possible. But that is one of the things that keeps it so interesting and so fresh, that there's so much information out there. There's so much stuff happening all the time. And therefore, as a result, it makes our lives easier because we've always got new stuff to try, to talk about, you know, whether it's with each other, with customers, friends, you know, it's...
It's very much like, it seems like it is the beginning of, at last, people have been saying for years, you know, rum's like going to be the new vodka a long time ago, and then rum's going to be the new gin for the past five years or so. And I think we're starting to get to that point where it's actually happening, I think, which is quite exciting. I think we're on like the beginning of the even steeper upslope of it all, I think, which is good. But We spoke about it, something that came up the other day, about sort of misinformation being out there and stuff that isn't necessarily factually correct, that people are reading about or, you know, seeing or being told about by someone else or something like that. And it's not good, you know, it's not good to get that sort of... It's not good for Rum's reputation as a whole, I don't think. And we just want someone to, you know, we want people to drink the nicest drink possible and the drink that they're going to enjoy the most, whether that be, you know, Captain Morgan Spiced or, you know, Afton 50.
Yeah. So I think I was looking at something the other day. I probably botched the figures a little bit, but I'm pretty sure in the UK alone in 2019, rum sales surpassed about £1 billion. And I think that was equated to around 35 million bottles sold, something like that. I think it was predominantly white and spiced, if you're putting it into like very loose categories. Yeah. But then there have been upticks on some of the other kind of styles, you know. So I think it's seeing a massive growth, which is very, very exciting. It obviously creates an opportunity for people to swoop in there and maybe try and make a little bit of a quick buck with it, which has obviously been a big and growing fear in the rum industry. However, what has been very nice to see is the fact that that's been countered so much by other people that are, again, clearly very, very passionate and knowledgeable about what they're doing. And they're not trying to, from what it appears, they're not trying to cement these laws or create these rules or regulations to gain anything for themselves or restrict other people or restrict like creativity. It's purely, all they're calling for is like transparency. You know, they're saying people can do whatever they want and keep it exciting and interesting and different, but just be honest with the consumers, because that is what is so important, and people should know what they're getting, which I think in terms of like having like a standpoint, do you know what I mean? Having like a bar that you're setting, I think honesty and transparency is a pretty good one to kind of like set for yourself and for the industry. And as a result, because of that, I would say, again, you know, given that I'm still fairly, fairly new to this world, even in the last 18 months, it feels like things are really, really starting to ramp up. And it just seems like there's so much going on and so much interesting stuff happening. Now, again, part of it's going to be a little bit of a bias, because the more people that I get to know that are also interested in this stuff, the more that it opens up, the more that I'm kind of, what's the way to put it? The more that I'm exposed to it, you know? So I would say you were very much my starting point on the journey of kind of getting into rum in general. But no, it's true, you know, and there's a handful of people that we've worked with over the years, behind bars. I won't name any names right now, but you all know who you are if you're out there watching this, which you probably are, because it's probably only going to be like 10 people that watch it. But you know, there's people that have definitely set me down this path, and it has purely been just because they've been so interested in it. They've been so interested in it themselves. You know what I mean? So, like, you wouldn't have spent all the time that you spent with me just talking about rum and drinking and same with cocktails as well, things like that, and beer. You wouldn't have really spent that time doing that if you weren't passionate about it. And, yeah, you know, people aren't really doing it through... There's no, like, perceived gain that they're going to get from it. It's purely just the enjoyment. And that's what I've really liked so much about a lot of people that I've met through doing this job.
So fundamentally, I think everyone wants to drink a nice drink. Do you know what I mean? Everyone wants to, at the end of the day, like, stuff these days is getting more and more expensive, especially in bars.
Yeah.
So why not actually, you know, maybe pay an extra couple of quid and have something that you really, really enjoy, rather than having just, you know, a very bog standard rum and coke or something. Why not splash out and, you know, get a nice daiquiri. Yeah.
Well, I think that's what we try to instill in people, that new members of the team that we take on when it comes to training, one of the big focal points of it is that product knowledge, that ability to offer choice, but doing it not in like a forced manner. We basically try and instill some like enjoyment and excitement and interest in the products first. Like me personally, I would have a lot of trouble trying to sell something that I really didn't like. I'd rather have a lot of go-tos myself and have reasons behind why I enjoy them, and then use that tool to pass on that knowledge to other people. So yeah. I think it seems forced. Have you ever been into a bar or just spoke to a bartender and it feels like they're trying to push something on you just because they feel like, I don't know, whether they've got like some kind of incentive going on or they don't really know too much about the products, so they've just got like a set, you know, list of things that they will like give to you. I think the more that you understand and the more that you know, the more comfortable you feel behind the bar, the more you enjoy it, and the more you enjoy talking about it to other people as well. I used to be terrified of like, you know, someone like going in depth about certain spirits or certain products in particular, or wine used to be a big one. Like when I started in bars, I always thought that everyone that came up and ordered wine or asked for something specific, they knew exactly what they were after all the time.
Rookie
and
mistake.
They would judge me on it if I picked something wrong. Yeah, and it just turns out that's not the case, you know. And the bottom line is, even if people do really know what they want, they know what they want. They're just going to pick it, aren't they? They're not going to they're not going to question you for days about it. So
the people that actually know what they want are probably the least fussy, because they'll just come up to the bar and go, right, I want this.
Yeah.
I've looked at the menu, I want this.
But it is really nice to kind of like try and spark that fire in people that are new, certainly behind the bar that we work in anyway, in the Smuggler's Cove. We've got such a unique array of products and stuff to offer to people. We've got all the foundations there to offer up that unique experience, but it's certainly the people at the forefront of that are the bartenders and the rest of the staff that, you know, we really try and push to give them that knowledge just to be able to offer up something a bit different. I mean,
at the moment we've got 190 odd rooms, I think.
Yeah, I think it's 191, give or take, if a few things are out of stock, or we maybe see fit to try and include something new, you know.
Whoops. It happens from time to time. It would be completely us not doing our job properly though if someone comes in and enjoys rum and we weren't able to offer them something that they would enjoy though. I think that is kind of the fundamental kind of element of our job, or one of, is being able to provide people with a drink that they're really going to enjoy, that they might not have had before, but they like a certain amount of other things that we can then use to recommend something else. You know, it takes a lot of time, unfortunately, doing a lot of research drinking these things.
Someone's got to do it, man.
That's very
Someone's
true.
Someone's got to do it.
But yeah, I mean, should we get on to a little bit about what rum is?
Sure. You can lead the way on this one if you want, mate. You can give a little bit of a rundown. I'm sure anyone that's watching will have at least a little bit of prior knowledge. But if you want to give like the foundational stuff about, what rum is and a little bit about the history or something like that, and then we can talk a little bit about...
Go on.
We can talk about some personal favourites, you know, maybe some cocktails, some cocktail recommendations.
I've got
give people
right
something
next
to do.
A little personal favourite. We'll cater for everyone, do you know what I mean? Some people might not know, Jack. It's true.
Sure. Well, what we were saying before we kind of decided to do one of these was that we would obviously, I mean, it's our only real kind of way of communicating at the moment anyway, doing this. So we just figured if we were going to have a chat, we might as well just record it anyway in case there might be some pearls of wisdom in there, you never know. So it's very likely that we'll do more of these, and we would potentially hone in on specifics, whether it comes to certain styles or certain brands or geographically, you know, certain unique things in the rum world. So
I think there's certainly a lot of stuff for us to cover, put it that way.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But I think as well, you know, if there is anyone that does watch one of these and would like to maybe ask certain questions that we could include in future ones, or certain things we could delve into. As we said when we started, we're very likely to go off on tangents 95% of the time. So at least if we've got a couple of questions that we can focus in on, you know, that will at least keep us a little bit grounded. So for anyone that doesn't have us on Instagram and would like to follow, it feels weird. It's the first time I've ever had to do this. So it's just Rum With It, all one word. And that is where you will find, yeah, mine and Andy's joint little nerdy Instagram page where we post all the weird and wonderful. So yeah, anything that you would like to maybe ask or feature, just drop us like a DM on there, and we can, I'm sure that we'll, you know, follow it up in there. Or likewise, if you've got any drink recommendations, cocktails, beers, anything that can keep us busy during this lockdown period, yeah, that'll be very welcome as well. So,
yeah, that's the first plug out the way. Well done. Nailed it. Pick winning. Yeah, so we'll discuss what rum is a little bit, I suppose. Why not? Like Jack said, I think we've got plenty of areas to cover. I meanwhile, speaking of favourites, I'm just going to pour myself a little Smith and Cross.
Cheeky.
It's wonderful.
It's officially mid-afternoon now, right? It's what, 4 o'clock?
It's like 4:10, yeah.
Yeah, it's more than acceptable.
5 o'clock somewhere, right?
That's absolutely right.
So in terms of rum, kind of history, if we're talking very, very far back, actually stems from China a very long time ago with a thing called arak. It's kind of really, it's quite hard to find these days, actually. I mean, there's a few producers out there. But they're not anything huge. It's not massively popular. I mean, in Asia, you'll see it quite a little bit. People tend to use quite a lot in sort of these countries like Bali, Thailand, where a lot of people go backpacking and stuff like that. They'll actually replace rum for arak. But again, I'm sure we'll get into that really.
So is it typically... It's not classified as rum, right? It's not officially a rum.
It uses sugar cane in the process, yeah, but also I think it uses some rice as well.
Right, okay.
It's kind of like somewhere in between, but I believe it's the origin kind of it all. Yeah, so most of the stuff, kind of started happening obviously with Christopher Columbus in, you know, late 1400s, 1490, there we go. And that kind of really obviously kicked off a few things. It kicked off essentially cheap sugar being imported over to Europe, kind of kicked off all the spice trade as well, amongst other things, and obviously slavery, which is a bit depressing, but here we are. Jack looks suitably depressed.
I'm just listening intently, mate. That's all it is. Listening intently.
So this was kind of slavery was kind of basically a way of cultivating sugar very cheaply, so they could transport it back to, you know, well, mostly the UK, to be honest, and kind of the rest of Europe. And we could all enjoy sugary treats.
But, you know. Yeah, I think it's a shame in a lot of ways that it has such a dark history, but I think it's a very, very poignant thing. I don't think it should be forgotten about that is kind of where rum really started up, you know. It's I know, like when we do masterclasses and we talk about this stuff, it's quite a glum place to. It's quite a glum starting point, but you know, it is what it is, and I think it is very important that it's acknowledged.
Yeah, absolutely. I you know, it's obviously not a nice thing to happen, but it is part of the story of Rum, you know. So basically, the idea, kind of rough idea surrounding Rum. I mean, again, if we do any more of these, we'll probably do a whole thing on kind of a bit more in depth on Rum history at some point, I imagine. But the whole kind of premise surrounding Rum basically was the slaves would basically be fed molasses, which is a byproduct of making granulated sugar. They'd give them, the slave, like plantation owners would give the slaves, they'd water it down with some water and give them this molasses because it's still full of sugar and some vitamins and minerals and stuff from the sugarcane itself. So basically, this kind of molasses would be left out kind of in open-top containers just because it was for slaves. They weren't really that bothered by it. Well, the plantation owners weren't really bothered if, you know, flies went on it and stuff like that. So what would happen is yeast would fall on top of this molasses and start turning the sugar into alcohol. They'd essentially be drinking molasses beer, really effectively. That's kind of where, once kind of plantation owners cottoned onto this, that they could use this essentially almost waste product in molasses to kind of make more money by making rum with it, kind of boomed from there. And look at us now, £1 billion of the sales in the UK. Last year.
Crazy. Yeah, no, so that's obviously a very, very brief overview. And from that point, obviously kind of technology advanced, people's understanding of distillation methods and fermentation and ways in which to do that were either traditionally done differently around the world, and certain ideas were definitely passed around. And then the more that importing and exporting became a viable option for different countries and islands, and stuff started traveling around a lot more, that's when this really kind of like big conglomeration of different styles and different ideas about rum kind of all came about.
I kind of on a wider social, political, pretty much everything scale, kind of that whole from Christopher Columbus going over there and, you know, obviously discovering America and things like that, and amongst other things in the Caribbean, it kind of really opened up the world for a lot of people, you know, certainly starting linking Europe to that part of the world. And then there was already some influence from China at kind of around the same time as well. So with the Silk Road and stuff like that. So that kind of really opened up the actual world to everyone. It's quite cool.
Yeah.
Kind of, it's kind of a lot bigger picture than just rum, but.
Yeah. Like, no, absolutely. Absolutely. But from someone that came into it a few years ago, having no idea and knowing what I know now, what would you say to someone that was completely new to rum and asked for recommendations about, like, I'm sure for anyone watching this that doesn't really know much of anything about rum, there'll be a few brands in particular that they recognize. So white rum wise, they'll recognize Bacardi. If they're looking at something spiced, they'll know Captain Morgan's or Sailor Jerry's. And then if you're going darker, it will be typically what is classified as like navy rums, so they might know like Lambs or Woods or something like that. So if someone was trying to get a bit of an idea about rum styles, what is your kind of take on that? Like,
it's all a bit of a grey area really for me at the moment. I think we're coming to this sort of crossroads where I don't think you can really define white rum as just white rum anymore. I think there's so much variation. Like, you know, we drink some stuff that is very, very weird, but it's white rum still. You know, if you're classing it as white rum, then it's in the same category as Bacardi, when it couldn't be further removed from it, yeah, aside from the colour, essentially, yeah, or lack of. This is what we were kind of talking about before, with like sort of a lot of, there's a lot of bits of like misinformation kind of going around, or people kind of getting the wrong end of the stick. Maybe. I think there's certainly scope for us, a conversation to be had with kind of certainly at least bartenders. I don't think consumers are quite ready for it yet, but certainly bartenders, in terms of how we start looking at rum in terms of categories. I know.
Yeah.
One of our kind of favourite rum people, Luke Garno, has his own kind of method of categorising rum these days, but I don't know how well that would translate into customers.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? And it's one that there's a lot of back and forth about within the spirit category at the moment. It's trying to find that fine line between keeping it streamlined and understandable enough for the average Joe, but then at the same time covering all bases and satisfying the needs and wants of the kind of nerdier consumer. But it's definitely a starting point that I find myself going to more and more now when it comes to introducing people to rum. I always say that one thing that makes it both very difficult but very interesting to learn about is the amount of variation that's out there. I think a bit of a misconception is the fact that there's like no rules and regulations to it, and there's, you know, unlike something like you know, certain spirits, if you think about like cognac or armagnac or a lot of wines or champagne or, you know, scotch, bourbon, stuff like that, they've all got certain stylistic qualities that comes from where it's actually made, how it's produced, raw materials, you know, etc. So people think that because rum is made all around the world rather than in one specific place, because there are loads of different colours and styles and flavours and things, people think that there's not really much of a thread that runs through it. I don't really agree with that. I don't think that's the case. And again, it's a very important movement going on at the moment within the category. I think there's a lot of discussion about the likes of GIs, so geographical indicators, and whether certain islands and certain countries can use, it's essentially like a stamp of approval, right? So if something comes from a certain island, it has to have abided by set rules in order for it to be classified as, for example, a rum from Barbados, or a rum from Jamaica, or a rum from Mauritius. You know, I think that it's another, it gets kind of dicey, doesn't it? But it's an interesting step in moving forward and trying to provide as much transparency and honesty with the consumers as possible. There are obviously people pushing back against these kind of suggestions and recommendations. There are some countries, on the other hand, however, that already have the GIs in place. And it's very interesting to see the shifts in opinion, but I think it's going to take a while for it all to come together. The world's obviously a big place, so.
Yeah, I think a prime example of it going really well and really badly is Jamaica got theirs a couple of years ago, I think.
Right.
And I believe that was a fairly breezy process. I don't think anyone had any major disagreements with it. I mean, there's like, what, 6 distilleries on the island, like big ones anyway. And they were all fairly on board with it from the offset. I think everyone, Jamaica has a very distinct style, shall we say. Anyway, so they'll kind of just carry on. They'd have carried on doing what they were doing regardless, GI or not really. I think it's a bit more to protect outside people coming in to Jamaica and trying to make rum there and calling it Jamaican rum. I think the actual people that are from Jamaica that basically look after all the distilleries there, I don't think they see any issue with it. But then you look at Barbados, that's got some outside interests there, shall we say, with sort of, you know, plantation being there, and then actually Bayesian people kind of looking after the majority of the other distilleries. I think this is when it starts to get a bit messy, like it has done. And there's not, it doesn't seem like they're going to come to an agreement anytime soon, I don't think, on Barbados. I think it's going to be...
I think the main argument seems to be, in a lot of cases, the argument against having geographical indicators is that certain manufacturers, distillers, whatever, they are concerned that GIs will stunt kind of growth within the category, and it will also stunt some creativity. Whereas people that are really pushing for the GIs, for the stricter rules and regulations based in certain areas, their main concern is that they have their way of doing things. The reason why rum from these certain areas is so popular is because of the certain stylistic qualities and where they come from. And I think that it gets so tricky because it is such a tightrope walk, isn't it, really? Like, it's, I still personally don't fully know even where I stand with it. I think I definitely much more lean, I think I lean more towards having GI, so having, you know, indicators from certain countries. And I think it's predominantly because there definitely are people out there. I mean, there's people that do it now that essentially ride the coattails of success of other rum manufacturers.
Oh yeah, big time.
Do you know what I mean? And they will try and plonk a certain region or country on their label and, yeah, just hope that that will do. And then when the product isn't actually as good quality, it gives everyone from that place a bad rep, you know? And if me personally, if I'd been working for years and years to really cultivate a good name, you know, and a good quality product, and then that was just being completely overshadowed and ruined by someone else just kind of like jumping in there. Yeah, I can totally understand why people, I can understand why it's a very touchy subject.
Yeah, well, personally, I think I'm all for it. I don't see, essentially, the GIs there. Well, let's take Barbados, for example. The only reason it's there is so if you put it's Barbados rum on the bottle, it follows this criteria. You can still make rum there however you like. It's just you won't be able to call it, you won't be able to put on the bottle, it's Barbados rum.
Yeah.
Which it kind of, it just protects that name of, you know, people like Foursquare Mount Gay that are kind of, you know, really trying to keep that sort of, it's almost like brand reputation.
Yeah. You know?
It's almost like people who get by, well, certainly us two, if we bought a bottle of rum that said Barbados rum in it, we kind of know what to expect going into it. I don't think, I mean, some other people might not, but we certainly would. And I think it's a bit more about protecting that.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's, I think that the push to these various directions that people are moving in and the general ideas about what they think is acceptable or what's not, what's right, what's wrong, and just this increased kind of like, internationally it feels like everyone's more connected now than ever, and as a result there's been some like super unique and interesting stuff kind of coming to the forefront. There's certainly been some rums and things that we've tried that are just like mind-blowing, and we're obviously in a very fortunate position where we kind of have it at our fingertips all the time. I totally understand why someone wouldn't want to just dive in without any prior knowledge and try a really expensive bottle of rum, or I can totally understand why people have certain preconceptions about white rum. I mean, I don't know about you, but some of my first drinking experiences when I was younger, it was like either Bacardi, like Gordon's gin, Bell's whiskey, you know, like all the things that I wouldn't necessarily say are very representative of the whole category of spirit, you know, where, like, it would seem a shame that, it seems a shame to me that the only experience people have with something like rum is, you know, Bacardi that they drank too much of when they were younger, Captain Morgan and Coke, and then they maybe try Kraken because they know they like spiced rum and Kraken looks a little bit fancier. You know, it seems quite a shame when there's so many other very, very interesting and unique products out there that is the kind of, right now the general consensus is that they're, you know, some of the most popular and best and representative products for this category. But it is nice to see that more and more there are people fighting against that.
Yeah, you know, it's good for us. Like, I mean, I firmly would put us in the camp kind of fighting against that and trying to get people to try new stuff and stuff that hopefully is made slightly better and stuff that people are going to enjoy a little bit more as well, I think. Mm. I think I'd put us firmly in that camp. I mean, there's nothing worse for me than selling somebody something behind a bar that they're not going to enjoy.
Yeah, yeah. I think bottom line is, if, like some of the brands I just mentioned there, like, if someone likes one of these products, I would be the last person ever to really judge someone on it. Like, people like what they like. I just think that people need to, it should be more clear as to why, that's the way to put it.
I mean, as long as people are drinking rum, it pays our bills, so.
Yeah, no, it's just like, yeah, I feel like given some of the things that we've had access to try and the amount of time, effort and care people put into this stuff, it seems a shame that people can swoop in and just do things very artificially and very sped up. And not always necessarily sincere. I mean, I'm sure people that are making all these, like, these mass-produced rums, I'm sure that they are perfectly happy with the way they make it. I'm sure they're perfectly happy with the final products, and they don't see anything wrong with it.
I'm sure they're perfectly happy with their bank balance at the end of it.
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, like, I don't necessarily think that there's anything wrong with it. However, people shouldn't be claiming that they're one thing when they're actually another. Like Captain Morgan's, right? Due to the amount of sugar that's in there, the strength that it is, it shouldn't. I don't think it is. Does it still call it rum on the main label, or is it a rum based liqueur now, or just a rum based spirit?
The one I always used to use, I don't even know if they make it anymore. I haven't seen it for a long time. It's Bacardi O'Carl. Mm. It was like, I think it was like 35%.
35, yeah.
So on the back of it, it was called like a rum based spirit drink.
Yeah, it's not sexy, that, is it?
It doesn't really roll off the tongue, no.
Yeah, it's not sexy. I mean, I don't mind spiced rum as a category to a certain degree because
it kind of gets people in the
yeah,
door.
Exactly. It's a great gateway in. I don't think it necessarily should be classified as rum because a lot of it is highly flavoured and, yeah. Again, it's a rabbit hole we could go down for hours and hours, and there's a lot of people that would agree, a lot of people that disagree. I think it certainly serves its purpose, though, you know? And there are some good spice rums out there. And then, obviously, as well as the kind of rum side of things, the other thing we're both very passionate about is the cocktail side of things. And that is something that you can really kind of, like, utilise in those drinks, if you've got, you know, more rum-based spirits that are flavoured in certain ways, that are quite unique, it's very fun to kind of, like, play around with those when you're trying to develop cocktail menus and, you know, just drinks for personal consumption and stuff like that.
For personal consumption, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you look at when we've been sort of designed this new cocktail menu for Smugglers and stuff like that. It's, you know, we've used quite a lot of, well, certainly a few drinks have got spice from, you know, flavoured from anyway. I know we've used like some Chairman Spice, we've used some Diabless Clementine.
Yeah.
It's not like we shy away from using these things. It's not like us being snobby about it, I think.
But again, you see, like those two, they're two very interesting prime examples of spiced rum that I would recommend to a customer that came in and they just said, I don't really like rum. I'd drink a Sailor Jerry's and Coke. I'd say, well, you know, maybe try something a bit different. And 9 times out of 10, the reaction to it is really, really good.
So we have returned from a little drinks break / smoking break / whatever. Wee break. All the above.
Well, I believe it is like, it's what, 20 odd degrees outside right now?
It's glorious outside right now.
Yeah, it's actually, it's like a tease, isn't it? You know? It's like, I can guarantee when everything's back to normal, it's going to be cloudy, raining.
Oh, 100%, yeah. Let's all, it's a glorious Easter bank holiday weekend, but but we've all got to be inside, so when it kicks off again, it will be miserable. It'll be pissing down for like 3 weeks. No doubt.
I was just going to say, if you could have one drink right now, cocktail wise, that you might not have the ingredients to make. What do you reckon? Yeah,
that's a very good question, Jack. You should be like a someone did an English degree. What are you thinking?
See, I'm
like a zombie, like a really heavy.
Yeah. Yeah, like a Mai Tai. A Mai Tai would be great.
Oh, do you know what? One of those Appleton 12 Mai Tais.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't got any of the heat of the line.
That's the thing, at the moment, in mine, I think the only thing that I'm lacking from looking in my drinks cabinet is rum. Because it's kind of like the first to go.
Oh, yeah.
When shit hits the fan, the rum is the first. Don't get me wrong, I've still got plenty of stuff, but I've got some, like, bourbon, whiskey, liqueurs. I've even got, like, some Aperol, a bit of vermouth.
Oh, an Aperol spritz would be delicious right now.
Yeah, I've got some little cans of soda as well and Prosecco in the fridge.
So lucky, yeah.
Yeah, I've got it. Yeah, I'm well equipped over here.
Can you like make a bucket of it and just throw it off your balcony, like into my mouth?
And leave it outside your gate and knock and run away.
Do you reckon I've got enough Smith and Cross to do like a hurricane? Do you reckon that's 120 mil?
Yeah, I reckon he'd get away with that. But once that's gone, it's gone.
Yeah, I don't really want to waste it on one drink.
A little Smith and Cross flip, that'd be banging.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I might do that, you know.
Yeah.
The thing is, our wonderful friends at the Whiskey Exchange are still delivering. God bless their souls.
I think they are, you know. I think they're business as usual.
I believe Master of Malt is the same as well.
I'm pretty sure when we were chatting earlier, we were saying about how it's really good that there's a lot of charitable things going on, you know, within the industry. And I think suppliers like these, I've seen like Speciality and Whiskey Exchange are kind of linked, but I know they've been doing like
Edgerton, Beams and Tory, wasn't it, that were giving out those little packs to all
doing like little hampers for people with like food in and stuff. And then there's been some organisations that are doing like cash donations to people and just like some relief funds set up and stuff like that. It's really good. It's really, really good to see. You know, I've just seen on here, which is New Inn.
Ooh.
But, so, they've got, it says it's Dawley's 3-year. It calls it overproof.
Oh, yes, I have seen that. It's like 47%.
47, like yeah.
Boom.
I bet that would make a powerful.
I'm not just a pretty face, guys. I'm not just a pretty face. I remember things about rum.
I bet that would make a powerful daiquiri.
Yeah, we're probably going to have to get one of those, aren't we?
All the dolly stuff is so reasonably priced.
It's so cheap for what it actually is. Like,
Dolly's XO, $33.95 a bottle. Such good value. For the quality of the product, it's insane.
That is ridiculous.
Mm. Yeah, that'd be worth trying that, though. Slightly more potent Dolly's 3.
So, to get that straight, the Dolly's XO, which is it about 8 to 12 years?
I think so. I think that's the blend.
Is £33, right? Is that on whiskey, I think?
£33.95. Yeah.
So, a bottle of Kraken on Whiskey Exchange is £25.25.
So it's been matured. Oh, so it's been matured for at least 6 years. Finished in Oloroso sherry casks.
It's incredibly good.
It is.
If you want to buy a bottle of Kraken for £25.25, spend
it's quite please, expensive.
Spend the extra £8.
I didn't realise that it was that expensive.
I think you can get it for cheaper, obviously, but I don't think Whiskey Exchange particularly wants to sell a lot of it. So,
yeah. Oh, when I was in the US at the back end of last year, and if you go into liquor stores, they have like these crazy 1.75 liter bottles. So they've got like all the everything you'd expect. So they've got it's like Bacardi. They do massive bottles, but they do massive ones of Kraken, and it's exactly the same bottle shape. Just enlarged.
Oh, wow.
It's ridiculous. I don't know who needs nearly 2 litres of Kraken. I guess it's people like throwing like house parties or something.
I've got one question.
Go on.
Are the finger holes any bigger?
Yeah. No, it's everything. It's just enlarged. I've got a picture somewhere. I won't be able to find it right now. It'll take me too long, but I'll send you a picture afterwards. Because I had it to do like a size comparison. I held it next to my head.
I feel like we've strayed into very strange territory.
No, I'm just saying. But I don't know who needs 1.75 litres of Kraken. But yeah, I didn't realise it was so expensive, man. I thought it was still cheap, but I guess the way it's kind of marketed is it's like it's the step up, isn't it? It's like Captain Morgan's, then you've got Sailor Jerry's, yeah. And then after that it's like Kraken. They're like the little steps up.
By comparison, would you say our favourite spiced rum? I mean, it's Chairman's, right?
I really like Chairman's spiced, and especially for the price point as well. So yeah, like when you look at it, it's like 20, 23, 24.
It's gone up a touch. So one Whiskey Exchange at the moment, it is £25.95.
Right.
So for an extra 70 pence, you could be drinking Chairman's Spiced instead of Kraken.
Yeah. I think the thing that's so nice about that is I'm pretty sure they obviously still add sugar to it, but in terms of the way that it's spiced, it's like a blend of 3 to 4 year, right? And then they kind of like steep it in the last year with the almond.
I think it's about 6 months, yeah.
Yeah, almond, orange, cloves, cinnamon, nutmeg, allspice and whatnot. So the flavours that you're getting from it are like really, really, it's got like a very, like it's like Christmas cake vibes, isn't it? But it just tastes a lot more. I don't know. I think the more that you get used to drinking these things, the more that your palate kind of detects if something isn't quite natural or not. Things that are a bit more synthetic or artificial, it does shine through. And I think with a rum like that, it's all the flavours just seem more like.
I mean,
right.
It's obviously very sweet, but again, we understand where people are coming from when they like that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like the purpose of it, right? Like it's sort of what they're going for. And bottom line is you're not going to be able to add that element to it unless you do dose it a little bit.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things that we'd still drink it. Like, you know, I remember us drinking a bottle of it in, what, an hour and a half?
I don't remember.
Well, I think it was the couple of zombies each we had afterwards that probably really finished us off.
Yeah. No, I mean, it works great as a mixer. It works great in cocktails.
This is a great segue into, it's like we're professionals at this. Probably the kind of stay-at-home competition that's been going on during all this thing that I am most excited about.
Yeah. There's been some, like, really interesting premises, hasn't there, for, like, you know, kind of at-home cocktail comps and, you know, DIY, yeah, challenges and stuff like that.
Yeah, but this is... I'm talking about the chairman.
Oh, I was wondering where you were going, actually.
We were literally talking about this before. I feel like this is a great segue into it.
Nice, smooth. I like it. Keep the transition going.
I mean, you've cocked it up a little bit. I'm not gonna lie. Where the hell are you going with this? but we'll take it. I mean, we're new at this, so we're doing all right. So this is the a really interesting thing. By Chairman's Reserve, you basically do. Well, Jack, I'll let you explain it while I get the website up.
Oh, thanks. Well, yeah, from what I've seen so far on social media, it seems like they are doing a basically create your own spiced rum using Chairman's as a base. So the idea is that you are kind of tasked with devising and developing your own reasoning behind your own concept for a spiced rum, sort of using Chairman Spiced and the flavours that they chose to use as a kind of like a basis to work from. And I think initially you have to send off an essay of some form? I think you've got to send off an essay, don't you, talking about spices you want to use, the kind of like blend that you would want to devise, and then also a perfect serve as well that you would want to include that spirit in. And then I think if the panel of judges are happy with your kind of inspiration, then you will get sent a spice pack. And I think, if I remember rightly, I was watching this the other day, but off the top of my head, I think you get sent almond, orange, cinnamon, clove, nutmeg, allspice. I think you get sent six, and then I think you're tasked to add three of your own and use Chairman's White as a base, I think.
So, yes, so basically you have to basically design a concept around a spice rum that you want to create, mm-hmm. essentially, is the initial preliminary stage. Basically, like, you have to explain, like, your vision, your inspiration, like a perfect serve for it, etc., and how and why you'd want to promote it in the kind of drinks community.
Right. Okay. That's cool.
And then once you've done that, like you don't have to submit a recipe or anything like that. So it's really kind of like, I mean, you have to think a little bit about it, but you don't have to get specifics of right. I want this, and this in my room. Mm-hmm. Which is quite nice. And the second round is, like Jack said, you get to create a spice room with Chairman. So it can either be the normal Chairman's Reserve or the White. And you get, in this little kit, you get sent. Jack was close, but not quite right.
What did I miss or what did I get wrong?
So you got vanilla, dried orange, nutmeg, cloves, almonds, and cinnamon.
Right.
I think you said allspice in there somewhere.
Yeah.
And then you get to personalise your blend with three additional spices of your choosing.
Cool.
But you obviously get to do this at home as well, so you can experiment with different ways of actually infusing the rum with these things. So you might have a really obscure ingredient that you want to, you know, maybe create an essence of or do something like that. It's quite interesting. There's certainly...
I think you can use other spirits to... Like infuse the spice as well, is that right? Like you could use vermouth
Yes. One of the bullet points is other higher proof rums or spirits may be used in creating spice extracts. So, you know, you could realistically, you could almost make like a some sort of weird bitters blend almost.
Yeah. If I remember rightly on the checklist at the end, the final bullet point is you can't use anything illegal.
No illegal ingredients, so...
Nice. Yeah.
Probably half of Liverpool out.
No, I like it. No, but things like that, it's interesting because it's... Yeah, like I was saying to you earlier, I think the hardest things that I've found is the... not being able to be sociable so much anymore, or certainly not in the way that I would like to be, you know, face to face with people. And I think also just fundamentally, like actually getting to do the job, like bottom line, I enjoy making drinks, playing around with different spirits and different flavors. These kind of like, it seems like daily, you know, tasks, little comps, things like that. It's still keeping everyone connected. It's, you know, getting the creative juices flowing a little bit and just kind of like challenging you to do something exciting. And I think, I'm pretty sure in this comp anyway, some of the winners get to go to St. Lucia, right? Like, I think that's one of the...
Let's see. Yes. All expenses paid trip to St. Lucia. I mean...
Yeah, you can't complain about that, right?
I have a funny feeling our good friend Dave Marsland will be on that trip somewhere because he goes there about bloody six times a year. Yeah. I bet he's up the wall at the moment because he's not been there for like 2 months.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been sat in my flat for nearly a month. I'd be happy just to walk down to like Liverpool One right now and do a few laps, you know. So, yeah, getting to to a lovely island like that, I'm sure wouldn't.
I mean, apart from going to St. Lucia, you do get to work with Chairman's Reserve Master Blender and create your own spiced rum.
Do you actually get to use what you've devised to...
So it is basically a winner from Europe and Asia, one from the USA and one from St. Lucia. Ooh. So I'm guessing the three people that win and will go over there.
Nice.
Get to collab with some other cool kids from around the world. And,
nice.
Make some delicious rum, which it sounds horrific. The winning team will be credited on this single release, which should be sold worldwide.
I mean, oh, wow.
You get your own rum.
That's quite a clever little marketing thing, that, isn't it? It's like you get someone else to devise something insanely tasty.
Yeah.
Then just fire out.
There's a great countdown. There's a little countdown on there as well. So you've still got 35 days to enter at the moment. So we're on the 10th of April right now. You've got 35 days. So there's a little bit of time.
That's cool. Well, I mean, speaking from experience, I was in the Chairman's Mai Tai comp last year. And again, I think the way that they structure that and what it kind of like challenges bartenders to do is really, really interesting. You know, you've got a fair bit of time to devise the drink that you want to make. You get to be quite creative with it and...
That Mai Tai was delicious as well, by the way.
Cheers, man. And it takes, you know, it gets you to delve into a lot of different, it gets you to follow down a lot of different avenues. Like me personally, I'm happy to sit there and get nerdy about drinks and try out loads of different, like, you know, cocktail recipes and stuff like that and specs. I'm not so good on like the kind of social media side of things. It's not anything that I've ever been really super into or like confident about, like going on camera or like taking pictures and documenting. Every time I go in a bar, I'm not taking a picture, even though like I've been to plenty of bars that I've really liked, you know. My personality, I end up just like talking to the people that are there more, you know. I'll talk to bartenders and people, and I won't spend as much time, you know, Instagramming and tagging and whatnot. But a competition like that, it kind of like forces you to do that a little bit, and you've got to look at all facets of it and kind of like figure stuff out. And it's cool. It's really, really good.
For the folks at home, Jack, what was your Mai Tai recipe?
So it was devised by myself and also a lovely chap called Dave. Ozzy Dave, who sadly isn't with us right now. He is all the way
he's
in. I made him
sound like
he's dead. he's in Melbourne,
in Australia.
Yeah,
which is the same thing as being dead.
So, myself and Dave, we devised our own little Muay Thai spec, and my God, off memory. So, if I remember rightly, it was 22.5 mil of lime. It was then. God, I feel like I'm going to butcher this so bad. I'm pretty sure that it was.
I put him on the spot, and he's not rising to it.
No. I've got it. So 22.5 mil lime. It was 30 mil of regular Chairman's Reserve, 15 mil of Chairman's Forgotten Cask. We then made our own like Curaçao, and it was basically a blend of apricot brandy, Falernum, and Chairman's White infused with loads and loads of like orange peel together. So there was, I believe it was 15 mil of that. So 22.5 mil lime, 15 mil of our homemade Curaçao, 30 mil of Chairman's Reserve, and 15 mil Chairman's Forgotten Cask. Basically shook all that up, strained it over cubed ice, and then the garnish for it was a dehydrated like orange wheel or orange disc. But then what we did was we floated a little bit of Chairman spiced on it and set it on fire, so it smelled like really, really nice. So the idea that myself and Dave were going for was to have a Mai Tai that incorporated all four expressions of Chairman's in it. And it was boozy and it was tasty.
It's very delicious.
To blow our own trumpet, but it was good. Unfortunately, we didn't get to the final. Like I said, the marking criteria for it is it's everything you marked on the actual taste of the drink, how you promote it, the idea behind it, the full shebang. And I think we fell slightly short, but we did get invited to the final that was in London. And everything that was on display that night was great. You got to try all the different Mai Tais, and again, you were kind of marking them. You got to vote for your favourite at the end, but it was a little bit of an incorporation of everything. It was, you know, were the bartenders engaging? Did they put on a bit of a show? Was the drink presented nicely? Was it tasty? You know, the full works. So it was really good just to get involved in something like that and see. And again, it's a prime example of a competition that it sort of pushes you out of your comfort zone a little bit, but it also encourages you to get out there and meet other people. Do you know what I mean?
I'm just waiting for you to say that none of them were as good as yours.
No, they were all great. Like there was some really, really good, some really, really good ideas and drinks. Obviously it got a little bit hazy maybe towards the end. So, you know, it's like I could barely recall my own cocktail recipe, let alone half a dozen other people's at this point. But no, it was a really, really good experience. And I feel like a competition like this will be somewhat similar, you know. It'll be, it's just a really nice way to keep people engaged and give them something to do and something to look forward to as well, which is really cool.
Yeah, I think, we've obviously got a really good relationship with the guys from St. Lucia Distillers and Emporia, etc. You know, we stock everything, pretty much everything, right, that they have, that comes out of St. Lucia on kind of a consistent and not so consistent basis. I know we're very lucky to have some of the 1931s that I don't think anyone else has in the north of England.
Yeah.
You know, there's probably two or three places in the whole of the UK that stock them. I think some of the expressions we have anyway, which is really nice. But the reason why we like people like this is because they are, and to not sound really Liverpoolian about it, everyone's dead sound.
Nice and fun.
You know, like all these people that we interact with from kind of who look after stuff like that are really nice people, and you know, we know them very well, which is good. A few exciting things coming up. So we're probably going to do some more of these, no doubt. To kind of slowly start wrapping up. I mean, Jack will probably start waffling again. So we've got Rumfest, Manchester Rumfest, organised by one of our very good friends, Dave, has been rescheduled because it was supposed to be.
So it's going to be April the 4th.
But obviously, this whole thing, which is great for me because I was supposed to be in Mexico, so I wouldn't have been able to go.
Silver linings, glass half full, I like it. It's good.
Yes, exactly. And it's now rescheduled for the 29th of August in Manchester. And it is at. Where is it at?
I can't remember the name of the venue, you know.
Viaduct Warehouse. There we go.
That's the one. Yeah.
Which would be really fun. There is.
Well, it sounds like they've compiled like a super solid lineup of people there. I feel like the
ridiculous the amount of people that are going
going to be
there. Like I think it's like 22 quid a ticket. So.
Oh yeah, the value for it will be ridiculous. The amount of different brands that are there, stuff that's being showcased is unreal. Yeah.
Do you want me to do like a very quick list of people that are there?
Sure, yeah. Do some of the heavy hitters or something. Yeah. Okay.
Right. I'm going to do this very quickly. Right. We've got Clermont, Chairman's Reserve, Neptune Rum, Pusses, Brindle Distillery, Nord, Diabless, nice. Ray and Nephew, Coco Canoe, Appleton, Jay Yao represent, Diplomatico, Hampton, Clarin, Veritas.
Nice.
Black Top. William George, which is delicious.
Delicious.
City of Manchester Distillery, Foursquare, Dawley's, Goslings, Abuela Cachaça Plantation, Berry Brothers and Rudd, Mount Gay.
Yeah, I mean, I'll put it this way. I think if that's not enough to interest you, then
Soggy Dollar. I'm excited to try them. Put it that way. There's loads.
Interesting name.
There's loads of
cool. Yeah.
And then we've got what else have we got coming up this year? There is London Rum. Well, Rum Week essentially, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Which is, I believe, October. Let me just double check the date.
Yeah, it's like right around the time they do Imbibe, isn't it?
It's the week after London Cocktail Week.
Right.
So everyone's probably already hungover anyway, and then we go and drink loads of rum. Probably not going to end well. But it's always fun. It's always great. I believe it is the 29th. No, sorry, I'm lying. It's the 17th to the 18th of October.
Cool.
Tickets aren't available till July.
Yeah. Well, hopefully by then, you know, all this situation will have breezed over. You know, hopefully we're at the other end of it.
Yeah, and then we can all drink rum together again, which would be great. Because me just drinking on my own like this, it's a bit depressing.
Hey, you're not doing it by yourself, you're doing it with me and anyone that's out there, so...
Yeah,
right, well, should we wrap it up for today then? And then, yeah, maybe come back to this at some point in the next few days, have another little chat, see if anyone's had any questions for us in the meantime. And
if anyone wants to ask any questions, basically, if you've seen this on whatever media you're seeing it on, just comment underneath it. And me and Jack have got nothing else to do, so we'll probably read it and then either answer it kind of in the comments, or we will do a little bit on it if it's an interesting enough question.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. I think we've got some really exciting topics to talk about, so if you think this one's a bit boring and we've been a bit walking on a bit, I think it's hopefully only going to get a bit better once we're a bit more used to doing this, because it's the first time we've ever done it, so
yeah,
that's about